Hey everyone, welcome to Savage to Sage, where we explore the evolution of entrepreneurs. In this show, we hear from leaders on the challenges and breakthroughs that have shaped them on their journey toward becoming a sage.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Savage to Sage podcast. I have the distinct honor of having Craig Overmeyer on this episode. It's actually a really funny story how Craig and I met. Fullstack has been working on developing with startup or with scale-up organizations. And ironically, I was like, you know, looking up scale-up coaches in Indianapolis, and I found Craig's name at the top of the list. And Craig comes to us with a ton of experience. I'll only highlight the two decades of nearly of executive coaching, but I will tell you that we've spent, you know, a few hours together, and the way that he communicates and empowers is such a beautiful thing. And if you are scaling up an organization, this episode is specific for you. So welcome, Craig.
Glad to be here. Yes, I've learned a lot from you as well. So I'm sure we'll collaborate and have some new discoveries.
Yeah, wonderful. So just to reiterate for our listeners, the goals for 2024 for the podcast, you know, they've continued upon what we've built upon in the past couple of years. And the first thing is that we want to create a space for leaders to kind of share their transformational journey. We want to honor the humanity of leaders, and we want to kind of give unique pathways for leaders to lead their organizations differently. You know, not necessarily a churn and burn type of leadership development method. We want something to be holistic for people's overall well-beings. As well, something that's new to this year is that we want to highlight specific HR problems, because as Fullstack, that's what we do as a company, talking about health benefits, recruiting, retaining talent, and performance management. So Craig, I think indirectly we'll be talking about retaining talent and performance management, but we're excited to kind of jump into the conversation.
Good. We'll directly address that issue.
Wonderful. So to start us out, Craig, like, can you give us a kind of a concise bio of kind of what led you in your career up into this point?
Yeah, I'll start with, I'm Baba with my 8-year-old granddaughter and 1 year and 2 month grandson here in Michigan. We moved up here from Zionsville. My wife had an antique shop for many years, and we had a horse business. My wife was the professional. I was the one who cleaned the stalls, so I was the entrepreneur. So sorry, but hopefully you'll laugh at that one. So my professional journey goes back to in my 20s. I lived in Europe and studied. I learned to teach people meditation courses, and then I decided to go to seminary, and I got a doctor of ministry in pastoral counseling. And over 20 years of that, I worked with a lot of family business owners. Having a family business can be a daunting task, especially if there's a transition from one generation to next. 1999, I took some training by Ron and Carol Ernst, amazing people in Carmel, Indiana, in real-time coaching. And I was teaching folks how to transform management into more of a coaching model. It was amazing transformation in cultures and the ability to attract talent and keep talent, because no one really wants to be managed. And I think we should even challenge the term sometimes, unless it's really done well. 2007, I received a phone call from Vern Harnish, who's wrote Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. He's a global thought leader. Most people have heard of him. Gino Wickman was a friend, and I think he launched EOS. They were sorting out, what does it mean to be an entrepreneur? And Vern studied the life of John D. Rockefeller, and he saw these habits of having clear priorities, having data that drives your decisions, meeting with them. So he used that to create this book, Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, How to Increase the Value of Your Business, that as that evolved, it became Scaling Up. And so in 2007, in between the books, Vern was asking someone in Indianapolis what he should know as he's developing his coaching partners, he was selecting a few folks to do that. I met Vernon, and I think the most elderly coach, and there are about 250 of us around the world.
Wow. 250 around the world.
Yeah, only 250. Aren't a lot. There's a lot of EOS facilitators or whatever they're called, but we're coaches, and coaching is most of the folks have either been a CEO or have coached a business or exited. I'm the one who's done the research with hundreds of his executive leaders, thanks to Mike Evans, who owns Forus Inc. And so we have studied through his process called Mastering Your Core, Forging the Path, Ensuring Execution, the Hallmarks of Excellence in Leadership. So I come with when I work with teams and cultures, I'm bringing years of experience of various teams, from very dysfunctional to somewhat dysfunctional to highly high-performing teams. And so that's my specialty. But I'm especially focused on executive teams and CEOs to build a community where it's for the greater good. Build a community for the greater good.
That's amazing. We have to talk offline about Chorus, because I have a good friend, Ron Stoller, who's there. So yes. Sure if you've met him or not, but...
Yeah, Mike has amazing business, so they're good people.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, so I think today, you know, as we've kind of prepped for this call, we wanted to talk about becoming a learning organization, you know, and what is involved with that. So can you tell me, how would you define what a learning organization, and why that is important?
So the foundation of all these programs to grow your business really goes back to the work of Jim Collins and his research when he was at Stanford and beyond, and from the good to great research. One of the things he found out is you look at two companies that are very similar, and he's a really amazing researcher, and what's the difference between the company that arcs up and becomes the great company and the company that doesn't do that? And one of the keys is this concept of discovering SMAC. SMAC. It's an acronym. So when he was doing his research, he also looked at the military, and he also saw some comparisons between military leaders and these level five leaders. So level five leaders have an indomitable will, and they also have humility. But they're also really good at providing a platform of psychological safety to continuously learn what went well that's replicable, what didn't go well that's replicable, and then from that continuously learn, all right, as these lessons help us to see, if we're going to scale, it has to be specific, methodical, and consistent. So many entrepreneurial firms skip that. They have a quarterly meeting. They have a few conversations. Well, what'd you learn here and there? And that's okay. You can get some really good insights. But it should be very rigorous. My coach, Devine, who's the number one Navy SEAL in his class, worked for 20 years in developing SEALs. He's my coach. And when you learn from a SEAL, you learn specific, methodical, consistent, and you better acknowledge your mistakes. And so the failure of many entrepreneurial firms as they're growing and scaling is they fail to have these after-action reviews, or if they have them, they're weak. And it needs to be a frank, candid conversation where you really acknowledge, again, the three questions. What is the replicable learning we can discover after this review, after this quarter or project, from what went well? What is the replicable learning from what didn't go well? And in light of those conversations, what specific, methodical, consistent either systems or processes do we need to work on? So Jim and his team are very consistent, extremely disciplined. And when you see the map that he has, everyone can look up Jim Collins, the map. It starts with disciplined people, and it's a extremely important process that all my clients do every quarter and every year. And it's really lame just to say, what'd you learn? No, what mistakes were there? What really went well? And now let's replicate it. And that ties in with his concept of you must look at your business as a flywheel. So a big part of the scaling up process, which includes Vern Harnish and Jim work collaboratively in many ways. The Scaling Up book is really taking a lot of what Jim's research was saying. So I have a relationship with both. And some I actually have a doorway for some. I have five executive CEOs who've spent personal time with Jim in a small group for the last 2 years. So I'm really steeped in this reality, learning organizations like Navy SEALs after the action are always continuously stepping back on the beach. If you're a Navy SEAL, stepping away from the work and asking those two questions. And then the third question is, now what can we do about it? But it's not just do, it's specific, methodical, consistent.
All right. I'm letting everybody have some time to take notes there, you know?
Yeah.
Just great. So, specific, methodical, consistent. And then the Jim Collins map, that's great. When we talked previously, one of the things that you talked about that's normative for organizations is friction, confusion, and underperformance.
Yeah, there's a Peter Drucker was actually a mentor to Jim. And Peter was the most famous management guru, teacher, leadership guy that really has impacted all decisions around evolution, evolving your business. Anyway, he said, there are only three things that happen in all organizations: friction, confusion, and underperformance. Everything else requires leadership. So you need friction because some things are off track. Too much friction, though, then it becomes drama and a roadblock. Confusion means, all right, this isn't working. Let's learn from this. It ties back to the learning.
Yeah.
Or you haven't done a good enough job to create clarity. Where are we actually going? And that every employee should crystal clear, if they're ever asked, what are you doing? They would be like the janitor at NASA. What are you doing? We're putting a man on the moon.
Yeah.
It wasn't mopping floors, right?
Yeah.
And then underperformance is continually, it's called entropy. Cultural entropy is what is working against your vision and your BHAG or your mission. And it's continually going. So you have to continue to address what's draining our energy, what's inefficient, ineffective. Those are normal things. So you want to dive into those and really find out what can we do to accelerate our flywheel, how we do our business. And create A players and A potential players, and anyone who's not an A or A potential player, you can't afford to have. Now, you have to be kind if they're not the right person. You want to coach them up if you can.
Yeah.
But that ties into the leadership then. Everything else requires leadership to be mindful of the friction, confusion, underperformance.
Wonderful. So how do you see, typically, I know that most of your work is to get organizations to see that these are realities and lead them out of them. But I guess my question is to you is, how do you, like, without coaching, how do you see organizations deal with, friction, confusion, underperformance without kind of that correct, kind of guidance? You know what I'm saying? How does that fail companies, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Some companies just start making a lot of money and it covers up a whole bunch of bad stuff.
Yeah.
They make enough money and you're kind of miserable when you go home, but that's okay. Yeah. We made a lot of money and then you could exit.
Yeah.
There's others that it's like, if someone asked me, if I was going to play in a golf tournament, I wouldn't dare try to be prepared for a golf tournament without a coach, right? I mean, it's just ridiculous. There was Bill Campbell was the coach There's a book called The Trillion Dollar Coach. Everyone should read about Bill Campbell. He was the coach to Steve Jobs and all these executives in Silicon Valley, and more than likely impacted our lives because of his impact with them. He brought humanity into their awareness and better ways of thinking of the dignity that people need and what it takes to inspire people to work hard together, have productive conflict, not step away from things. And so as you grow, it's just you have blind spots. And if you don't acknowledge your blind spots, they will impact your business. You can still have a viable business, but usually it's entrepreneurial poverty. They pay everybody else, and then they have a lot of business, or they have a lot of revenue. But if there isn't some help, the tendency is, as you start up a business and are growing your business, you have less money because you're the owner or whatever, and that can be a really tough position. It's not true for everyone.
Yeah.
But as you scale, it gets more and more complex. A lot of your listeners aren't scaling. They're growing. But scaling means you double in size every 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's some initial thoughts there. I hope that helps.
That totally does. That totally does. As you work with leaders, like one of the things that I think is helpful, just to say, like this goes specifically to the piece of, you know, leaders are humans, you know, and you know, just their humanity. When you think about like what a leader faces on a day in day, you know, day to day basis. Can you describe, like, you know, the demands that they, you know, constantly face on a regular basis from your seat?
Yeah, I've learned to simplify the complexity.
Yeah.
And that's why in the Scaling Up book, and Traction probably does this too, but it tries to simplify, where should your mind be? You know, what should you be thinking about? And in Scaling Up, there's people, strategy, execution, and cash.
Yeah.
And so at various times throughout the week or the month, you better know your cash position. You should probably be focused on profit first. Then you need to be able to be aware of what are the habits that are going to help make systems and processes flow so much more smoothly and make it a great place to live and work. Or what habits need to be transformed. And then is it really crystal clear in everyone's mind their piece of the puzzle, where are we going as a company, but how does this tie in for your own personal well-being as an employee or a leader? And then the people side is what HR, right?
Yeah.
Again, I've been very heavily influenced by Brad Smart and the top grading. Is a very well-researched that's where the term A player comes. And how is it that you attract and retain A players? Goes back to a learning organization. You'll want to have them resonate with the cash flow issues, the execution, and the strategy, and that that makes sense to them. It's meaningful work, that they then are onboarded in a profoundly beautiful way. And like the best onboarding, sometimes the employees I talk to, they say, you know, it's a year or two later, hey, can I have that first day again? Because it was great. And then continuously learning or teaching in this person either for the skill they need or teaching them how to think as an enterprise level. Now, they may have a job on the dock, but the enterprise mindset is crucial. And so I would also say that it's important to have a learning agenda for everyone. Everyone has their own quarterly coaching session. Do away with after the year analysis is ridiculously ineffective. You need, from our perspective in Scaling Up, a coaching session for everyone, 15, 20 minutes maybe, where they know their quarter, their year, and their personal vision for the future. So anyway, the four categories, people, strategy, execution, cash, and to understand that as you grow and if you start scaling, you're going to have three barriers. Enough leaders to delegate, predict, and repeat, and coach. So that means you have to keep elevating leadership. What is leadership? What are the styles of leadership? How does leadership impact performance? Does everyone have leadership? Yes. Some have designated leadership functions, but everyone must have leadership training. And so the barrier to enough leaders to delegate, predict, and repeat. So you've got to focus on that. That the systems and processes will get jammed up or something's going to happen that you have to continually evolve systems and processes. And number three, that the owner and the executive team must be liberated from daily operations so they can really drive a great marketing effort. And they know every day what's going on with our customer. There's a pulse of knowing that and never taking for granted the need to give everyone in the culture a voice about, hey, what's going on? How can we create a business that is so attractive that we can market to the people we need to hire? We're marketing, obviously, to get more customers, but that you have that everyone's involved with marketing. I did some work with some dental offices and, you know, I said, well, who's in charge of marketing? And there was one person. I said, no. When I come to a dentist, whatever I experience from whoever has their hand in my mouth, they're doing marketing. So anyway, yeah. So the three barriers.
You will tell your friends. You will tell your friends if you got drilled too hard, you know, when you're in the chair.
Yeah. So I've just advised, just think in categories. What are the people questions that I need to have someone ask me? Yeah. And most coaches don't know your business, but they ask you questions that you aren't asking yourself. So would you rehire everyone enthusiastically is a people question. Or is your strategy clear and compelling and shared? Do you have market dominating behaviors and habits? And three, you know, are you focused on profit first and healthy cash flow?
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's complicated, but you try to put into those buckets. It's a lot easier to deal with.
Yep, that's great. So you had touched base on this. You had mentioned that part of becoming a learning organization is that leaders need to understand leadership styles. Yes. How would you define that?
Yeah, I would recommend your audience to connect with Korn Ferry, KORNFERRY. They're like Inc. 50 companies, you know, big giant companies, and they're global. And the CEO every Sunday has an article or an email blog post. And so Korn Ferry then worked with Daniel Goleman, who wrote a HBR paper everyone should read. I would recommend Leadership That Gets Results.
Okay.
Leadership That Gets Results. HBR, I think 1995 or 6.
Okay.
So Korn Ferry hooked up with Daniel Goleman, who also wrote about emotional intelligence. He's the guru that took the other research from other researchers and said, hey, this is emotional intelligence. He teamed up with Dr. Boyatzis at Case Western Reserve, and they discovered from the earlier research, maybe even 50 years before that, there were 6 styles of leadership. And that the style, depending on the situation, has a profound impact on the morale, performance, and getting results. What I experience is often if you start up and you're pushing and you got to get things done to get some revenue, the two styles that you'll tend to lean into is directive and pace setting. We got to go. And then if you're the owner, you're also doing, and you're not really yet free. You know, at some point you want to be. And so then the directive and pace setting style is essential sometimes. But when you look at the research, that should be used 15% of the time, probably, or less.
Mm-hmm.
Visionary is then another style where you're able to really create what's called a positive emotional attractor in the brains of everyone you work with. That means that literally, Boyatzis did this research at Case Western. When you coach people toward a dream, a vision, something compelling for themselves and the company, it begins to create a neural network that you can measurably see. It lights up, that a visionary leader can light this up. That's why, you know, some leaders, you'll go into battle for the, you know, person, you know, maybe get killed in war, you know, but so, by the way, the negative emotional attractor is the kind of managed, getting managed. You're not being pulled by a vision. You're having too much directive and pace setting. That's called the negative emotional attractor. Sometimes we need that. Mm-hmm. Another style is called affiliative. Hey, we're in a community. Let's really be community. And let's think about, like, Zingerman's, one of the best places to work on the planet up here in Ann Arbor. They have that attitude that we affiliate as as a community of businesses. And so the feeling when you go into any of their businesses, it's a community. It's not like some people say we want to have a family atmosphere. That's fine. I think sometimes family makes it hard to have conversations that are harder. So affiliative means you build a community. And so, for example, they launched a brand new farmer's market because one of the employees says, look, on Saturdays, there's not a lot of people in that parking lot. I think we should have, you know, so farmer's market emerged because they give everyone that opportunity. If you affiliate and think together, what's best for the greater good, like I said earlier. Another style is coaching. It's very important that everyone has a plan and they have a coach. Sometimes coaching is too directive, or sometimes it's too passive. So coaching is an active listening method where you summarize what they're saying and then ask a question to help them think better. Rarely do you give advice when you're in the coaching mode because you want to stimulate this new insight. Since Ron and Carol taught me, and I've had other certifications, you know, if you want to coach, you really should get certified, because sometimes you're actually mentoring, which is okay, but mentoring is showing and telling. Coaching is, after they've seen it, then having the person dig in a lot deeper, you know, to discover what do they need to do. Then the last of the six is participative. That's when you're together and you say, all right, we're going to vote. Or, hey, let's have a battle. Let's sort this out. Let's really dig in. So again, those six, depending on the situation, should be understood by your audience. And you can use the Korn Ferry workbooks to help guide you, because each of those components, visionary, participative, coaching, affiliative, pace setting, and directive, are needed at various times. Sometimes you just have one or two that you're using too much. So
that just helps equip the leader to kind of diversify their ability to reach their team and effectively lead them, correct?
Yes. And then when you read the article, and it's really a great article, you guys, just go read it, that there's actually then the climate of the place can increase or decrease productivity depending on the style of leadership. Because neurologically, a leader has, it's 70 or 80% of the influence of the climate of the place. We've all had that experience. A bad boss is very contagious. Or someone that you just is, you know, rough to work with. Someone who really inspires us, man, you know, it raises everything. So I think it's, you know, being aware that the leadership style creates a climate. And there's six dimensions of climate. How's the team? Does everyone understand the number one thing that I'm using my hand as gesture? So my thumb is, how's the team? That's the strongest digit. Is the team cohesive or not? Does everyone have clarity with the first finger up of where we're headed? Do we reward the behavior we're looking for? That's another problem that I worry about with growth firms. They tend to reinforce the bad behavior rather than even if something goes wrong, you'll say, hey, what'd you learn from that? You want to reward the action you want, And the research says if you reward the behaviors you want for someone in your business, that's what is called discretionary effort. And that's what you want. So again, is the team, is it cohesive? Is there clarity? Are we rewarding behavior we want? What are the standards that we hold, you know, our brand promises, our core values? My little finger then is, all right, what's my personal responsibility that the leadership style should impact? And then if you clench your hand, then you need to give the team flexibility to make decisions and not get in their way. So that access to all that is easy to find. I'll send you a PDF by Korn Ferry about how the soft skills are used by the sharpest people. So
I love it. And I think what I'm going to do is that we're going to put all of your recommendations in the show notes so people can have access to those.
I'd be glad to help. Yeah.
Their audience. Wonderful. So one of the things that you mentioned was, you know, part of being a leader is this ability to listen and to learn. Tell me more about that and why is that impactful for the organization, specifically as it relates to kind of creating this organizational climate? Learning.
Probably your audience as leaders in these in your firms, and they're having fun or they're growing and have great products or services that could really break out, and you know, you could be wealthy, you could exit, you could make a big dent in the universe. And I think summarizing it, just think like this: today, when you're interacting with someone before or after this podcast, often you'll be in the here to fix, tell to solve mode. So someone says something to you and you're the leader and you're hearing it to fix it. Okay. And that leads to more directive and pace setting styles. If you listen to learn, ask to empower, it's a better position to be in if you want to be free from the drama. Too often, if there is drama and you're here to fix, tell, solve, you're actually teaching everybody, hey, look, you guys misbehave and come to me and I'll fix it. They're not learning. Again, we're back to continuously learning to think about the enterprise and the one-page plan they have that they're following, et cetera. So listen to learn, ask to empower, really creates a collaborative experience. And so I would suggest that you're those listening really practice being that when you're hearing someone, you really want to listen, that you're learning what they're thinking and feeling. You're not going to your own thoughts. And then you ask questions that empower them to think better. And what I learned from real-time coaching Ron and Carol Ernst is, I think it's a foundation that most coaches would use, but what do you want? You know, the basic question, well, what do you want, Carly or Susie, as it relates to what I want you to do?
Yeah.
What do we want to do as a team? What are you doing? So now you look at what do you want? What are you doing? The third question is what you're doing getting you what you want. Now I have to evaluate. Now what's my plan? So I think the idea of listen to learn, ask to empower, you could use one of those four questions to say, well, it looks like we got off track on the delivery, comma. What did you want to achieve the last time you talked about this, when you got off track? What did you want to improve? Then whatever they say, I listen and learn. Well, it sounds like you guys had a meeting and then the system failed. And so when you're thinking about the system, what was it that you were doing that you needed to do differently? So now I'm helping them think, and then they tell me, well, yeah, we did some change in the system, and I'm always summarizing what they're saying. And then I'll go to, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, since that's what you wanted to do this, and here's what you did, 10 is great and effective, 1 is lousy, not effective. How would you rate yourself? And they say, well, I think I was an 8. And so I'd say, well, what would it take to get to a 10? Or I might say, well, you see yourself as an 8, I see you as a 6. Because I got this invoice that I'm going to have to pay for something. And then you get to, well, in light of what we've learned about what you want, what you're doing, you've evaluated yourself to improve, what's your plan? So listen to learn is a good segue into listening and redirecting, or listening and having compassion, listening and discovering a mistake, and you say, thank you for telling me about the mistake. Or listening and learn and ask to empower then can be, hey, I think this is a time to do some coaching. I would advise your audience, don't coach someone until you tell them you're coaching, because if you're used to being directive, it sounds weird, because now it sounds like you're interrogating them. Yeah. It's like, okay, where did you go for some webinar? You know, were you on a webinar with Dr. Overmeyer or something? No, don't coach you. Coaching is, you know, set up. But anyway, so listen to learn, ask to empower gives you a chance to figure out they need a vision.
Yeah.
They need, or, oh, I think it's their team, the affiliative. Oh, no, I think they need to be engaged in the decision because I just told them what to do and it didn't work. Or, yeah. Oh, no, this is a coaching moment. Or, no, daggone it, do it this way. Stop complaining. and get it done by 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So live to learn, ask to empower gives you time to consider your options.
Yeah, and kind of see deeper into what's going on in the situation rather than just come up with, I think this is the case, which is not helpful in any conversation whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, there's some new employees, you have to think for them. So early in an employee, you just have to be more directive and say, look, here's the 3 things I've done. But if you hand it back to them, of those 3, which one would you like to do? Then you're always still helping people think.
Yeah.
So I'm not advocating just passive. It's very direct. Here's where we're headed. I need your help. Let's have a conversation.
Yep.
So I call that an in-the-moment conversation. That's I trademarked that term.
Yes.
Don't let things pass. Why wait to a crucial conversation? Everybody gets trained in crucial conversations. If you have the in-the-moment conversations, you don't have to have as many crucial conversations.
Yeah, that's great. So as we continue talking about this, creating this organizational climate, you know, mission, vision, and values, whenever I work with an organization, I'm always like, what are they? And do you represent them? Can you tell me like why it's difficult for organizations to kind of live out their mission, vision, and values?
Sometimes they're too simple. Well, we want to have trust and integrity and high quality. Yeah. So that's called a complex equivalent. We don't even know. I mean, we all know trust. But then in context, you may not know it. Plus, I mean, it's just incredible. It's not only do you know them, but have people written them in their hearts. And when they are, they're just incredible. So I just take some help because we're not very good sometimes with language because the language doesn't fit with how people are actually thinking.
Yeah.
So my business core values is well-prepared. That's pretty clear. Are you well-prepared or not? Let's look at it. Exceptional experience. What was the rating? What could you have learned? Build wealth. You know, they're paying you a lot of money. Is more money coming back to the company that we're working with? Exceptional experience and super sticky. Can they remember what they're doing? So that's why now I'm using technology called Playbook Builder. My companies then use this so it can show up on their phone. It's not a traditional LMS, but it's a learning platform where they can continually upgrade. Like, what are we doing this quarter? What did we learn? Hey, this team, and so they'll get a text and they'll see a video and they have their playbook. Here's their playbook. Nevertheless, I think it's keeping, you know, top of mind what is most important that we need to keep focused on. So,
yeah, that's great. That's great. Going to Peter Drucker, you mentioned him earlier, and I think you mentioned that quote. Can you repeat that quote? And why is it kind of in the conversation of creating a learning culture?
Yeah, if you go online, I don't know all of his quotes. I would just recommend you do some study of Peter Drucker. He did, it's good news for me, I'm 73, and he did most of his work when he was like my age. So, you know, that's my personal bias. So he just was observing the reality of humans doing some business, and he said there are only 3 things that naturally happen in these interactions.
Yeah.
Friction, confusion, and underperformance. But the key is everything else requires leadership. So that's why you want to have a learning culture that maybe it's about their job, maybe it's about you have some assessment. Like often I use a productive conflict assessment. So the person is always learning, being self-aware. How am I showing up? How can I make a difference? And just remember, is the friction too much?
Mm.
Is the confusion too much? Is there underperformance too much? And so then if it is, then the learning could be, let's help them communicate. And that's my specialty. So I wrote a book, Accelerate Through Conflict.
Yeah.
So there's too much friction. And within a short period of time with some coaching and some focus and the right reading material, then you can reduce the friction. Confusion is maybe back to the senior team. Let's make sure that what we are all about, everyone can easily articulate when they're playing volleyball on a Sunday afternoon at a picnic and someone happens to hear that and they're looking for a job, or something like that. And then obviously everyone listening here wants a high-performing team.
Yeah.
If you haven't delved into the five dysfunctions of a team, that's really important. Patrick Lencioni also has the six working geniuses. And then Promoting Chorus, they have the hallmarks of excellence in leadership. They have the Belbin team roles. So again, a lot of the performance issues have to do with the right system in place, the right assessment, like hallmarks of excellence in leadership. Most people have to transcend. It's not just a job, it's a calling. So Peter's wisdom is everything else requires leadership, is not a leader dominating, but evoking the leader within. Albert Schweitzer, it's really interesting, famous doctor, someone asked him about being a healer. He says, I'm a physician. I evoke the healer, the great physician within. And I think that's another flip for the leaders is how can you do business inside out and pay more attention to evolving, developing, not only through book learning, but also learning about myself, learning about your team, and just make it consistent and fun and interesting. If you're interested, I have another resource, Zing Train up in Ann Arbor, wouldn't be too far away from you guys. Ari Weinzweig is a mentor of mine, and they can help businesses, I think, your size to learn many of these skills. And so I really respect Ari. As a matter of fact, he just wrote a book called it's called A Revolution of Dignity. And here's another really, this is fresh off the press. There's six ways to develop dignity in your business. Honor the essential humanity of everyone we work with. Number two, be authentic in all interactions. Number three, make sure everyone has a meaningful say. Number four, begin every interaction with positive beliefs. What we believe at work makes a huge difference. Number five, make a commitment to helping everyone get to greatness. And number six, actively work to create some sense of meaningful equity. Having a fair wage is crucial. And how the equitable, can everyone have a living wage? So I have a position with Threefold, an equity firm in Indianapolis. And so I'm the corporate executive coach for five businesses. And we really are locked into this thinking of having a kingdom impact or making the planet less dirty or just clean up our stuff. So I think that thinking like that is another way that I hope your audience is thinking that if you're learning, it's not only learning about how to work together, but what are we doing to the planet? What are we impacting our clients? And how can we just continuously get better together? I think that's the way I would put it.
I love it. Absolutely love it. I think the reflection that I have based on this conversation is the call to the leader. It's the call to the leader to understand their influence and how they develop as an organization is going to be key to how they move the organization forward. And I think what's beautiful is the amount of resources that you've given that are only going to help leaders do that. So I just want to say thank you for that, Greg.
You're welcome. And I know you guys have great businesses. You you're supporting. That can be really fun. And you should have friends at work, but just make sure your friendship doesn't block having the real challenging conversations. And give yourself a break. This is complex. And find somebody to help you. And just find someone who has climbed Mount Everest before. And you just need a Sherpa. And it's ridiculous not to have the help. So
yeah, that's wonderful. Can you make reference to that title of that book that just came off the press? That seems like a book.
It's Ari Wendwig, and Ari is just a remarkable leader. And as a matter of fact, years ago there was an article written that they're the coolest business in the United States to work for. But Ari Wendwig, it's called A Revolution of Dignity. And Ari Wendwig, Wenzwig. Bring your team up to Zingtrain.
Yeah.
And their culture is phenomenal. I introduced Ari to a group of 1,000 leaders at a conference. And everyone wants to have his sense of it's an ecosystem. Everyone counts. Elevate them, teach them every day. And he has a training compact. One more thing. If you do more learning, make sure that you have an agreement that the learner agrees to own the learning. Mm. And that the trainer agrees to provide all the resources to make it possible. And that's a covenant. If you make it a covenant or a concept like that,
yeah,
it's way more likely that you'll create a learning culture.
That's wonderful. Greg, I can't thank you enough for your time. I want to give this opportunity to you, but if people, you know, were listening to what you had to say and are like, I could really benefit from a further conversation with Greg, my business could have a, you know, really benefit from a further conversation with you, what is the best way for people to get in contact with you?
I've got a small team and I want to keep it that way. I have two new coaches. But anyway, the best way is just an email. Just send an email to me and I'll follow up.
Okay.
Bern Harnick follows up with every email I ever send, so I can follow up if he does. So Craig-O. So it's Craig-O, C-R-A-I-G-O, at culturesthatwork.com.
Okay.
Culturesthatwork.com. And I'm good at directing. I'm not a fit for everyone. I know that. But I know a lot of resources and I've been honored. Your team, I know at least I think one of your senior executives, and so I support you guys and help in whatever way I can.
Yeah.
Craig-O at culturesthatwork.com.
Well, Craig, well, listeners, I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Craig, and I hope that it's used to help scaling up businesses here in Indianapolis and maybe across the country or even the world. So, Craig,
definitely.
I can't thank you enough for your wisdom and for your time. Yeah. And I look forward to continue conversations with you.
Thank you. You're on a mission, and it's a good mission. And I think that your business can help support these folks in ways that way beyond what I've said. So thank you.
Yeah, a pleasure. All right. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to today's interview. To view show notes or hear more episodes, please visit www.savagetosage.com.